Hey.
Good morning, Kenny. This is AJ Fritz.
AJ. Hey, AJ. How are you, man?
I'm fine. How you doing this morning, buddy?
I'm doing good, man.
Yeah. Where exactly are you calling me from?
Well, we're up in the Northeast, so like we're kind of out by Long Island. We're playing this theater in the Round this evening. But I tell you what, it seems like no matter where we go, we can't seem to escape the rain right now.
I know. It's insane. It's covering the entire Northeast, and we're already drenched up here, man. But, well, it's part of what you do, Kenny. You are the traveler, right?
Well, that's right. And, you know, and it's fine. Normally, you know, it's not that big of a deal, but a lot of these shows have been outdoor shows. So, you know, the fans are getting a little bit wet, but they're still showing up. So that's great.
Yeah, they're still showing up. They want to rock with you. You know how that goes, Kenny.
Well, yeah, we appreciate it.
Hey, I want to say congratulations on the new record here on the Concord record label group, The Traveler. Wow, I got to tell you, Kenny, we just finally got the record in my hands, by the way, for the Fritz Rock Show a couple of days ago, and we've been hitting it hard. And although we're talking today, we're going to hold this interview back for another week so I can showcase the album some more and give it a bunch of spins. How's that sound?
Sounds great, man. I appreciate the support.
Oh, sure. Anytime. I got to ask you a couple of questions on this. First of all, you're wearing the production hat duties again, but you're also sharing the production hat duties with Mr. Marshall Altman, and he worked with you on your last record. And how is this collaboration working? Because I got to tell you, man, this record is just top-notch from front to back. Every song gives us a great piece of you know, true Kenny Wayne Shepherd Band material, but it also takes us a couple of different places as well.
Yeah, I mean, Marshall and I, you know, we worked together for the first time on the last album, Lay It On Down.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just really, we have a great connection. We got a lot of mutual respect for one another. We work pretty efficiently together, but one of the things I like about him is, like, you know, he gets out in the room with me and the band, and he's out there with us as we're playing songs down and recording them, where most guys that put on a producer's hat, you know, sit behind the console in the control room, and so they sit there and just kind of listen. But he's out there as if he's one of the band members, and he's there from the moment I get there to the moment I leave. And, you know, he's a hard worker, and he's really good with vocals, and, you know, which is great because, you know, I'm singing lead vocals, and we have Noah, who's been in my band for 22 years, singing lead vocals. So there's two lead vocalists in the band now, and a lot of different harmonies and things that we're doing in songs. And so Marshall's expertise in that area is really helpful. So, you know, it's been a really great collaboration with him, which is, you know, the last album was really great, and so that's why we did this one together as well.
Well, you know, you mentioned the harmonies. Absolutely dead on. Yeah, I picked that out right away, especially on Well, All Right. Wow, man, really great work with the harmonies on that.
Yeah, that song, well, Take It On Home has a lot of different multiple harmonies on it.
Yes.
Songs. Yeah, We All All Right is interesting because that song, actually, we're kind of like sharing the lead vocal. So Noah sings the verses, and I'm singing a lead vocal on the choruses. So that was kind of a different take, you know, on the vocal situation.
Yeah.
Something that we hadn't really done before, so it was cool.
You know, all these years, Kenny, that you've been doing this, one of the things that I always felt stood out about you was every time that you played, whenever your leads would come into a song, it seems to me that you never overplay the leads. It seems that every note seems to fit the song and serve the song well. How did you find that knack after all these years to make sure that you're never overplaying, that the notes serve the song and serve the melody so well?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that just comes from doing it for so long, trial and error. But, you know, just realizing, like, when I would listen to my heroes play, you know, people like B.B. King or Albert King or even Stevie Ray Vaughan and Hendrix, it's like usually when I would listen to these guys' music and I would feel moved by something, it wasn't because they were playing a bunch of notes really fast. It was more or less that they were playing, you know, one, two, or three notes, you know, in just the right way with the right emotion behind it that really moved me as a listener. So I felt like, well, that's how I want to affect people, the way, you know, music has affected me. And so, you know, I just kind of refined my approach appropriately. And also just being established, you know, like when you're young, or like when I was a new artist and I was young and I kind of like, you know, was trying to prove myself worthy of, you know, being in the music business and all that. If you want to like get out there and show everybody everything you can do, but at this point it's not necessary to try and take every song as an opportunity to show off, you know. It's more like, let's take every opportunity each song to play what's appropriate for the song.
Yeah, and it works. It really does. First off, the very first track on the record, which is the first single off the record, Woman Like You. When you guys get together in the studio, how does the whole thing lay out as far as if you're recording live, which is a big part of this record, how the band is actually together, facing each other, sharing the song together and playing along. How do you work that out before you say, okay, roll tape? You know, these songs, are they well rehearsed before you go into the studio or what?
No, everything's pretty spontaneous in the studio. I think that's, to me, that's the whole point of going in the studio.
Yeah.
Really, you know, that's where the creative process is supposed to happen. So I'll write the songs and they'll have really basic demos of just an acoustic guitar and a vocal. And that's the blueprint. That's the map for the song. I mean, so you hear the song. I mean, you can hear the arrangement, so to speak. We may make some changes on the spot as we're playing it down, but basically that's the reference point. And then we just start jamming on it, and, you know, and then it comes to life. And I kind of have an idea in my head of what I think it needs to sound.
Yeah.
So I kind of know what I'm looking for, but there's always the opportunity, because we're all doing it together, there's the opportunity for new ideas to happen instead of just what's in my head, you know?
Okay. Well, I got to say, it's captured and it's really superbly represented on the record. It's got a very live feel. And the recording, the mastering, the mixing, everything is top notch. It's got such a beautiful, warm sound to the record. And so kudos to everybody who put their hands on this, because it's got a really great dynamic sound.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm an old school kind of guy. We usually do things, you know, as much the old-fashioned way as possible. So, you know, even in this digital age of recording, we'll run tape and stuff like that just to, you know, get that real, that true analog sound. And then, you know, we also release all of our stuff on, like, 18-gram vinyl. And so, you know, if you're going to do that, I think, you know, it's really great that you're working with tape and stuff like that to get the real full effects. So, you know, we try and make everything sound warm and not too, you know, not overly saturated, but to have that really great warmth that, you know, all those old records that, you know, that probably you and I grew up listening to had.
Speaking of old records, you know, it was, it's very nice to see that there's someone else's name that gets production credits on the record as the executive producer, Mr. Ken Shepherd. Can you tell a little bit to the listener who Ken Shepherd is and his connection to you, and how far back does Mr. Ken Shepherd go with radio and music?
Right. Well, that's my dad.
And, yeah.
You know, we run things. We've been running my career together from the beginning. And so, you know, but he goes back. I mean, when I was a kid, my dad was, he was in radio before I was born. So he was program director and general manager. And, you know, like for a while he did the afternoon drive show, and then, you know, for a while he was doing the morning show, and, you know, he basically would do whichever show he felt, you know, more like doing. But anyway, so I grew up around a radio station. You know, that's one of the things, is that I grew up around all this music, and so it was really I was absorbing all of that.
Well, what was the call letters? What was the radio station?
Well, there was a bunch of different ones.
Like, okay,
before I got here, he was he likes saying, I work for the original K-Rock, which was K-R-O-K.
Wow.
K-R-O-Q. And then that was in my hometown. And then there was KWKH, which was a country station. And it was back in the day of like black and white TV and radio programs. That was like a huge AM radio station that like covered half the country. And they had like a big show on it called the Louisiana Hayride.
Oh, sure.
Important radio station. And then when I was a kid, he was working at a radio station called KTUX, and it changed formats a few different times while it was under him. And they did for a while. They were, I think when he came on, it was like top 40, and they changed it to active rock, and then they changed it. Well, it was mainstream rock and active rock, and then it went back to, I don't know. But, I mean, a lot of different formats. And so, you know, anyways, I went to every concert that came through town. I was there with him and, you know, got to meet all these bands and kind of see the, you know, the inner workings of the music industry and the touring industry and all that stuff. You know, I was just kind of silently absorbing, and has helped contribute to who I am as a musician and an entertainer, you know.
I'm sure. That's not, you know, a story you hear every day. Not everybody comes from that kind of a background that has, you know, the access or the availability to the backside of the music industry, with your dad being in radio like that. So I'm sure that, you know, after all these years, you look back on that quite fondly, for giving you a pretty solid base in music and musical taste, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I listen, you know, I grew up listening to everything from, you know, rock to country to R&B and funk music and gospel and jazz and blues, obviously. And blues is a, I don't know, for some reason I just had a special connection with blues music, but I really loved all of it. And so, you know, all that stuff kind of tends to find its way into my own music as well.
Oh, it does. It definitely does. There's smatterings of it throughout this record here, and it's also tastefully done. And in fact, there's a couple of covers on the record that really surprised me. One, I wasn't too surprised because of your work with The Rides, and I was so happy to see that you had covered this particular tune. Let's talk a little bit about why you decided to bring Mr. Soul into the Traveler's Realms.
Right. Well, I mean, I did this song with Steven and I. Steven Stills and I have a band called The Rides, and, you know, we've done two albums.
And great work, too, Kenny. Great work, by the way. We play those records a lot, quite a bit here. So great stuff,
yeah,
man.
You. So we were doing the tour for the second album, and at the end of the tour, we did a benefit concert that Steven puts on every year for autism awareness. And he has a bunch of his friends come out, and they raise money and stuff, and he perform. And so this year I played, and then Neil Young came out, along with a whole lot of other artists as well. But anyways, me and Steven and Neil got up and did several songs together, and one of them was Mr. Soul. And I don't, you know, I, when I heard that the three of us were going to play together, I kind of secretly really wanted to do that song with them. And then we ended up getting to do it, and it was really fun. I mean, it was a really great rocking song. And so after we did it, I was like, wow, I think I could probably do a pretty rocking version of that with my band. And so this was my way of just kind of paying tribute to that experience, because it was really fun doing it with those guys. And
yeah,
we did it in the studio, and I think we rocked it pretty hard.
Oh, you did. You did. I just love the guitar arrangement you put on it. Great stuff, Kenny. Really, you made it your own, man, and it rocks. It really does. So superbly done, my friend. Now, the very last track on the record, I happen to be a big fan of the man, and when I saw it and I heard it, I was blown away. And we were recently talking about, you know, working with that warm sound and getting that analog sound, and Mr. Joel Walsh himself put an album out years ago called Analog Man, and Turn to Stone, for me, was a track from Joel Walsh that was released on the Barnstorm album. And there's a story behind that whole thing. And then later, Joe re-released it and covered it on one of his solo albums later. But out of all the Joe Walsh tunes to pick, how did you decide on this great classic, Turn to Stone?
Right. Well, for me, I mean, I like to dig through people's catalogs, you know, and try and find the less obvious songs, the ones that don't pop right into your head right away.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of people think Joe Walsh, they think Funk 49, and they think, you know, Life is Good, and they, you know, all these other songs.
Uh-huh.
But for me, you know, we were doing a concert where it was an event where they were giving Joe a Lifetime Achievement Award, and I've known him since I was a teenager. We've been really close friends. And so
oh,
they asked me to come up and play, and And so they asked all the different artists that were performing, obviously, to do Joe Walsh music. And so I think we all did about two or three songs apiece. And one of the ones that I chose to do was Turned to Stone. And again, it was like, it went really well with me and my band, and it sounded really great. So we were in the studio, and I decided, let's do it in the studio and see what it sounds like. And what the version that's on the record is actually a live take in the studio. Like, that's us playing the song from top to bottom. And the only thing that we added after the fact were the horns section at the end and the background vocals.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Like an actual real live performance in the studio. So, you know, I just think it's a, I think it's a great song. And my goal is for people, you know, some of the fans may hear that song. Maybe they didn't, maybe they never heard it before.
Yeah.
They, maybe at first they think it's a new Kenny Wayne Shepherd song, and then they hear an interview or read an interview, and then they go, oh, wait, that's actually a Joe Walsh song. And they go, I've never heard that song before. And then they start digging around to go find the original, and maybe they find more of his material that they had never heard before, you know?
Oh, wow, Kenny, that's great. That's great. That's so generous of you, too, you know, to see it that way, to put it out there. Not because, just because you love the song, but also in a way for fans to rediscover, you know, where that song came from. You know, originally when that album was released, Joe Walsh, he wanted the label to press it as Barnstorm, not Joe Walsh's Barnstorm. The label didn't listen anyway. It was a band, Barnstorm. I guess Joe Vitale, Kenny Passarelli, guys like that were there, and it didn't turn out that way. They released it as, you know, Joe Walsh Barnstorm, and then later on, years later, he covered it again. And when I hear someone cover a song, what I'm looking for is for the artist to, of course, keep certain elements of the song there so that it's recognizable to the listener, but to make it their own, you know, to bring something of their own to it and deliver it in a fresh and meaningful way. And you did that, and I'm sure Mr. Walsh would be quite happy to hear this. Has he heard it yet?
I've sent it to him. Yeah. I talked to him about it.
I bet you he dug it, didn't he? He was happy, right?
I mean, I didn't hear any bad, any complaints about it.
So. I'm just kidding with you, man. I think it's great. I really do. And the artwork on the record, when you turn over the back, there's a car on the back, and then there's in the background is a city skyline. What city skyline is that, and what is the car that it looks like you're leaning on or is placed on the back of the CD here?
Well, that's in Los Angeles, and then the car is my it's my new Dodge Demon, which is, you know, the most powerful American V8 motor. I think actually at the time it may still be the fastest car in the world. It was like 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds, and it would do a quarter mile in 9.65 seconds. And they did a very limited number of those vehicles, only sold in the U.S. and Canada, and they're all numbered. And my car's number 18 of 3,000, and a really special vehicle. And, you know, I'm a real car guy. It's my thing, cars and guitars. So, you know, I had to squeeze it into the album artwork.
So you like muscle cars?
Yeah, absolutely.
Is that a Hemi in there?
Well, that actually, yeah, that's like, it's supercharred, and it's one of the modern generation Hemis. So that thing's 840 horsepower.
That sounds like too much fun then under the foot.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
It is. How often do you get to take that thing out for a nice ride? Do you ever get to open it up a little bit?
Well, yeah, I do. But, you know, I travel so much, so it's still got pretty low mileage. But every time I get behind the wheel of that thing, it's all smiles. You know?
That's a beautiful thing, man. Life is good for you, Kenny Wayne Shepherd. I want to say once again, congratulations on this record. And number one on the Billboard Blues charts, it's charting so well for you, and for good reason, too. It's really an excellent piece of work. You brought back, you know, all your players, Noah's with you. You got Chris Whipper-Layton, formerly of Stevie Ray Vaughan's Double Trouble. Must be a lot of fun working with him these years. And you got Kevin McCormick in the band and Jimmy McCormick and Joe Crown. And I'm sure it all feels like family when you get together to lay down these tracks.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I try and surround myself with you know, the best players that I can, because, you know, they make the music better, they make me better, and you know, a lot of these guys I've been working with for a really long time. So it's always a very nice, productive environment.
Oh, yeah. Well, once again, superb work, Kenny. We hadn't talked in a few years, and we got to thank Brad Hunt for reaching out and making sure that we could get together. We're working the record for you here at WLVR-FM Bethlehem. And once again, listener, you're talking with Kenny Wayne Shepherd and yours truly, AJ Fritz, on the Fritz Rock Show. Kenny, thank you so much, man. It was really great talking to you today. Once again, congratulations on another stellar album from you, and continued luck, and may God bless you and your family and all your works, and the Kenny Wayne Shepherd family, as well as you travel along as a traveler and deliver these beautiful notes to our ears and our souls. Thank you so much for the work, Kenny. I appreciate it, brother.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for the support.
Okay, man. Take care and have a great day, my friend.
All right, brother.
All right. Bye-bye.